That's great. Church is looking great, isn't it? One thing I was thinking was, I think we missed the trick, wind machines behind the curtains. And we would have had ourselves a Christmas music video right there. I mean, Mariah would have just appeared through them. Okay, enough of that. Okay, so yeah, I'm leaving London. We are leaving London, our family. So when I was thinking about what to share and what to speak on this afternoon, I kind of thought, well, it's hard not to be a bit retrospective. It's hard not to be reflective on the 12 years that I've lived in London. I moved here when I was 18 years old to go to drama school. I ended up in a hip-hop band, true story, and toured that for like 8 years, did a lot of ministry stuff with young people and youth work. So I guess I was kind of thinking, maybe I should just share a little bit about my journey, you know, my 12 years. Some of you might be at the start of your London journey, and I'm coming to the end. Christmas has turned out to be quite a bittersweet time for me, a sweet time because I'm in a city I love with people I love, but bitter in the sense that I have to leave them. And life is often about that, isn't it? It's about holding on and then letting go, holding on and letting go, and sometimes it's tough to let go. A number of years ago, Marcy and I we'd moved to Harrow, and we were really just, I would say, at a crossroads. Sounds very dramatic, doesn't it? We were at a crossroads. But we, and I don't want to sound cliched either, but maybe a little disillusioned just with our faith and what church meant and what religion was and who God was. And, you know, you just sort of, every once in a while, you just feel like you have to shake everything up. You know, I sometimes feel that routine can trick you into thinking you're going to live forever, you know. And you can just live in routine and then wake up and it's tricked you, you know. And sometimes you have to step out of routine. And I remember us feeling, we sort of were between churches and we just said, what do we need to do to make this real? What do we need to do to grasp the heart of what our faith is about, to bring it alive again? And, you know, love is at the heart. You know, God is love. Love is at the heart of our faith. Without love, we have nothing. We have a dead religion. But with love, we have something that's living and breathing and alive and active, that reaches out, that touches, that walks, that feels. And we started thinking, how could we maybe just take a risk and try and explore what it means to love again? Now, I'm going to share some stories today that some of you may have heard. So I'm sorry if I'm doing the whole, oh, that old antidote. Oh, Kevin, he's bringing that one on again. But it's my last time, so enjoy it. Okay? Okay. You're the lucky group. Okay? I remember we were in Harrow, and I get this phone call from my wife. She was in Harrow Town Centre. She goes, Kev, oh, you know, we've been talking. I've seen this. I saw a homeless person. And they were sitting down, and I really felt that we should invite them over to our house. Yeah? Okay. Didn't see that one coming, right? Left field. And I was like, okay, well, do you see the person? She goes, well, I walked past them, and I just had this sudden feeling that I should do it, but I don't know if it's a man or a woman or not. Or I went, okay, well, what you should do is when you go back home on the way back, check if it's a man. If it's a man, leave it. If it's a woman and you feel like you could take her in a fight, go for it and ask her over to our house, okay? Right, because I don't want anything going down while I'm not home. But she went back, and it turned out that this person wasn't there anymore. Now, Marcy kept saying to me, Kev, we've got to look out for this. We've got to do something about this. We've got to look out for it. And in the back of my mind, there's that sort of small party that hopes you never see them again, you know, because you know that you're going to have to break out of your routine. You're going to have to do something. You're going to have an encounter. Lo and behold, there he is one day, and we're walking up to Harrow on the Hill tube station on the way to church. And I'm like, maybe she won't say anything. And she was like, Kev, that's him. Go and speak to him. I was like, okay. So I went over and said, hey, how you doing? Got talking. The guy was Irish, so it was cool. Common ground, Irish, right off the bat, motherland. So we started talking, and he loved American football, and I know a bit about American football because I have a Canadian wife, and I just used it tenuously, bond with my brothers-in-law. And we were chatting, and he tell us great stories about how he saves up his money that he collects from begging, and then he goes to an internet cafe twice a week just to watch American football because it keeps him sane, a little bit of entertainment, something to watch, just gets his mind off it. And, you know, we just really got on like a house on fire. And so we turned around to him, and Marcy was nudging me like, do it, Kev, do it. Let's move beyond conversation. Let's move to action. And I was like, so do you want to come over to our house for some food or something? And he looked at me and he said a really deep thing. He said, I would love to, but I'm too dirty to go to your house. And I went, but we have a shower. And he goes, and this is the deepest thing. He said, I'm too dirty to use your shower. I'm too dirty to use your shower. What really struck me is someone who had no sense of the humanity, of the spark of the divine that was in them. And we bartered and begged and said, come on, don't worry. But he was too proud, too broken to accept this. So we swapped numbers and long over, to cut us, well, no, I'm not going to cut it that short. I'm Irish. Over a series of time, we met a Cafe Nero. And we would hang out and we'd meet a Cafe Nero for a coffee on his terms. And he was just a local Harrow guy. And we got chatting. And then it came to Christmas. This is about 3 or 4 years ago. We came to Christmas and we thought, let's get him a Christmas present. Now, we'd heard a story that he told us that one night Dave's listened to Wimbledon. He's listened to Andy Murray and he fell asleep and he woke up and someone had stolen his radio. So we thought, let's get him a radio. We'll get him like a DAB one, digital one. So we got the money together. We bought him a radio. We met up in Cafe Nero. And we set this gift down and he was like, wow. And he opened it up and honestly, his face dropped. He said, Kev, you could have put £10,000 on the table and a radio, and I would have picked the radio any day of the week, because that £10,000, I would blow that and do something crazy with it, but that radio will keep me sane over Christmas. You know, he listens to the tide and forecasts, and that helps him relax and sleep at night. And he was just overwhelmed, and we were just delighted, and he'd just become our friend. So we said goodbye, and we went to Canada for Christmas, and we had Christmas, and then I was checking my email, and I got an email from him. And it said this, it said, Kevin, I'm off the streets. I've got a job interview. It's because of the radio. And then he signed his name. And I was like, what? Right? What is going on here? You dangle that, you know what I mean? Some more information, please, you know, expand a little bit here. And so we got home, and as soon as I got home, I was like, okay, what do we meet up? We need to talk. And we met up in this fish and chip shop. And I walked in and I didn't recognize him. He was like clean and shaven and changed his clothes. And, you know, he still looked very gaunt and thin, but he looked like a different man. And he sat me down and he goes, Kev, you'll never believe this. He goes, Over Christmas, I was lying on a bench in Harrow and I was listening to Five Live Sport. And I don't normally get that channel, but I get it. And he always called it my radio. I was listening to your radio, you know, even though it was his, right? And he goes, I was tuning in, and he goes, and I heard they were having a debate. Somehow they veered off sport, and they were having a debate about homelessness, and I got furious. So I had like 20p in my pocket, so I got to a phone box, and I called in Five Live Radio and said, hey, you know, put me on, this is not right. And they put him on national radio, right? So he's on national radio in a phone box. They called him back, arguing about homelessness on Five Live, right? Apparently, it went down a storm. The phones were off the hook. People were calling in going, this is mad. Who is this guy? Now, someone called in and said, I was really moved by that story. I'd like to help this guy out. If he's homeless and he's up for it, he sounds like he's an intelligent man. I'd like to help him out. Can you get me his contact details? So they called him back in the phone box. They said, someone's phoned in. This is after he got off the radio and said, they want to help you out. And he said, where are you based? And he said, because it was national radio, he said, I'm based in Harrow. And he went, oh, because the person that's called in is a farmer in Harrow and they want to offer you a job. Now, little did they know that this guy used to be a farmer. He was a shepherd and he lost his job during the foot and mouth crisis, and that's when he spiraled into homelessness. So he's on national radio. He has a chat about homelessness. Of all the people in the UK that could call in, a farmer calls in that lives in Harrow, and he goes, do you know where Harrow is? And he was like, oh, I could find it. Because he didn't want him to know that he'd been on the streets of the area that he was offering him a job. Then he met a pastor over Christmas from another church that we attended for a little while, and he met him at the same time, and they got him off the streets. He got a job, and he ended up, long story short, he ended up working, helping develop homeless shelters in Harrow. Crazy story, crazy encounter, because I wanted to move from religion to love, from intellect to action. It's nothing to do with us other than saying hello to someone and having an encounter with them. Life is lived in encounters. Life is lived in moments. You know, someone said to me, why did Jesus tell people when he healed them not to go and tell everyone? right? This was in Alpha course. He said, why did Jesus tell people not to say anything? I thought that's a good question. Surely he wanted, you know, props, you know, and like, you know, everyone to hear. And it hit me that Jesus was about people and not PR. He was about people and not PR. You see, Jesus had the ability to change a religious debate into a personal challenge. Jesus humanized every encounter that he went into. You know, the word incarnate, you know, we hear that in all the Christmas carols, incarnate. You know, carne, the word carne meaning meat, like chili con carne, meat and chili. Incarnate, God in flesh, God in meat. Meat, flesh put on, the divine. Emmanuel, God with us. God with us, not walking by us, but with us. There's a difference between being next to someone and being with them, you know? Moments and connections, going to the heart of people's brokenness, meeting them where they are, meeting each other where we are. I went to an old church called St. Mary's. I remember being in a service, seeing this young girl in the corner, and something in me just said, there's something with that girl, there's something with her, and I couldn't get this girl out of my mind. And it wasn't because she was really attractive, it was just she was there, and I just knew that I had to speak to her. And I thought, do I live for the moment? Do I go with the moment, or do I stick to the routine? But I went with the moment, and I felt that God gave me this verse, this verse came to me. It was a verse, and I can't find it, and I've really tried to find it with Bible Gateway, like hardcore, and I still can't find it. I've done keyword search and everything, right? I'm sure it's there. But it says where David in the Psalms compares this person to a rare green jewel. I went up to this girl and I gave her this verse and said, I feel like God would like to say that this verse is for you. And this girl broke down. She wept in front of me. I didn't know what to do with myself, you know. And she'd just been so broken about her self-image over that. I didn't know her. Broken through that self-image. And in that moment, something was released. We had a moment. We had a connection where something was put back into place, where something was aligned. You know, Jesus looked people in the eye. He asked people their name. That's why they say at Christmas, love came down. What seemed distant and intangible and foreign became near and personal and real and intimate. You see, I've always had a tension between belief and action. It's part of being brought up in a Christian home. You get almost programmed to think what's correct rather than act in the right way, whatever the right way is. You know, you're programmed to say the right things and then do the right stuff comes after. To the point where you get so in your head, you're more worried about intellectually if you've got everything in place. You forget to live the life that Jesus came for us to live. There's a tension between belief and action. James said, faith without works is dead. Because our actions bear witness to the fact that what has happened in our heart is a true happening. If something has truly happened in our hearts, then what we do will bear witness to that action. You know, Jesus' main commandment was, his main commandment to his disciples when he was in that upper room was love one another. Love one another. Doctrine's great, theology's great, I love all that. We need to know truth, we need to stand in truth, but we need, it's more important that we be truth. It's us that loves and it's God who saves. It's God who rescues. You know, I don't know if you noticed, but everything Facebook has made me really aware of awareness. Everyone loves to be aware, don't they? It's just good to be aware. You know, like, don't do anything, but be aware, okay? Human trafficking, be aware of that, okay? Make sure you know that it's happening. There's an awareness, like, even Coney. Coney was great. It was a great film, Coney 2012 viral, but everyone was really aware of it, wasn't it? But how many of us got the little box set and ran around the streets? Not many of us. If that's over your head, I'm sorry. It's an internet thing. You know, in Facebook, we like to like stuff. You know, like, what a rubbish adjective. It's so passive, isn't it? Like, I liked him. I like that food. Is this just my beef? This is just me, isn't it? You know, it's so easy to press that little thumb, isn't it? And then move on with your day. Oh, I like human trafficking, and now I'm moving on. You know what I mean? And I'm not saying that to undermine that. And I'm not saying that to be convicting or to be proud or point the finger and make you feel guilty. I'm just saying it's interesting, isn't it? That we're in a culture that's set up to help us be aware and know about stuff, but rarely a culture that really asks us to get involved. That's why I'm loving that old stuff with the old people that these guys have been talking about, that the claspers are talking about. You know, love touches, it embraces, it smells, it holds. It redecorates houses. You know, what kind of world are we creating? Every day we're actively creating and informing tomorrow. Every act is a creative act. Every conversation, every day we go to work, that is a creative act. And we're creating the future that we want to exist in for our children. What's it going to be marked by? See, the Christian hope at Christmas, the real Christian hope is that we are creatively progressing away from chaos and brokenness to order, away from ugliness to beauty. That's the Christian hope. That's what I signed up for. You know, as I moved away, and this, I don't want to get into my story, but I felt I got very in my head. I was very involved in ministry. I would almost say I was a very good professional Christian. Okay, I knew everything. I could say the right thing. I did debates. I was really good at apologetics. I was sick at apologetics, okay? Like, they brought in a special weapon. Do you know what I mean? But I remember as I was making this transition, as I was trying to capture a faith that was real, that embodied, that was incarnate, I began to have a shift. I had this year and a half of freelancing, and it was the most bizarre year and a half of freelancing I have ever experienced, because it was the first freelancing I'd ever experienced. I remember I worked at a homeless shelter for 3 months. I did night shifts in Harrow for 3 months, and I worked in this homeless shelter. And the amount of people I met and stories, I remember this guy called Hatsu, this Indian man. I would sit up with him from every night, because I had to stay awake all night. I murdered about 4 box sets over this period, right? I stayed up with him every night, and in silence from about 2 o'clock to 3:30, he would have a coffee with me in utter silence for like 3 months. Rarely we would talk. But there was just something so precious in that shared moment. Because we were with him. I was with him. I role-played, acted, right, in it for the military. Okay, this is a real job. Okay, I used to be an actor. I basically went to military bases and got in character and had to go into rooms and help train officers in different situations, how to deal with different people, like people that were, you know, being insubordinate. That was the best one. I went mental on them, right? Right. But also stuff like, there was one where I had to come out as a homosexual, like, and that was one of the training, is that they realised that sexuality is a big problem in the army, and I had to act someone that was coming out to like a para regiment officer. Wow. Scariest thing I've ever done. And to see different people look at me like I was like an alien because of the sexuality I was acting. To see people look at me like I was, like they didn't know what to do with me. The empathy, the thing that taught me about being with people, about understanding people's journey, about understanding that everyone has a battle, was unbelievable. And it broke me, and it shaped me, and I feel that love got an opportunity to be in me. You see, I feel like God has been challenging me to journey into, and I talked about this a long time ago, a holy insecurity, I like to call it. It's an insecurity where you rely fully upon Him and His guiding, but it's fully holy. So you're totally insecure because you don't have control of everything, but it's holy because it's Him who's in control. And I like to call that living in a holy insecurity. You know, I ended up in the world of advertising. Yeah. And advertising's a crazy place. It's a place that promises satisfaction. It promises salvation. It promises that it can rescue you. And I realized that over the last year, God's taught me that there's a difference between satisfaction and peace. Satisfaction and peace are two different things. Satisfaction shifts and changes. You know, one minute you have it and then it's gone. You're satisfied once you have it, then it changes and you want something else. Whereas peace is constant. Satisfaction we go and search for. Peace comes and finds us. And a lot of people think that the Christian faith is about being satisfied. I don't think it is about being satisfied. I think it's about being full of peace. You know, Paul, when he was in jail, in the middle of the night, locked up, being persecuted, and he is just singing out some songs, just singing. Was he satisfied in that moment? In jail, in the freezing cold, possibly going to get flogged? Probably not satisfied. Was he peaceful? Completely peaceful. So peaceful that when the wall shook and everyone was about to flee, he said, "Hey, we're going to stay here. We'll stay. We won't even run because we're so peaceful, because we're so in the presence of our God." See, London is a city that's marked by achievement. It's where all the achievers gather and then compete with each other, you know? And it's got 7 million people, but can be the loneliest city that you'll ever experience. Everyone is carrying a story. Everyone is on a journey. You know, there's a great proverb that says, "Never judge a man, for there are things in his heart you would weep to see." Never judge a man. If you could live your life by that, you'd be doing great. I remember being on a tube journey with a guy, seeing this guy, and I felt like I should go and chat to him. He was the scariest dude. He was this 6'3" dude, this big hip-hop coat on. He was all like sitting down like this. And I thought, I'm going to go and talk to him. I was terrified. And I went and sat with him, and we ended up chatting. And it ended up that he was going to a judge in 3 days to get sentenced to go to jail. And we chatted the whole way, and it turned out we had to get a replacement bus, which meant we had to talk longer. And it was just a great conversation where I got to have a connection, a moment, with someone that I wouldn't normally connect with. If I just listened to him, love came down. See, this is life in abundance. When Jesus says, "I come that you may have life and life in abundance," not "I come that you might have everything you want and be totally satisfied." That's not the promise. The promise is the peace that surpasses understanding, that comes from the Prince of Peace. The life in abundance is living a life for each other and for Him. That's life in abundance. And when you do these things, it's not that they're hard. They can be a struggle, but these are the things that bring you joy. These are the things that bring you peace. These are the things that bring you life. And you realize that you've been fallen prey to the tricks of satisfaction. When really, God is calling you into holy insecurity of love. And you can do this in your workplace, you can do this in your relationships. Small steps to live in that life with Him. You know, the other week, I met a friend. He's an artist. He's just about to get signed. A great musician. Really struggling to find his voice. Doesn't know that his art is having an effect. And often us people that have been Christians a lot of their life, they're scared that what they're doing isn't like enough. You know, we're always worried we're not doing enough. You know, like, is it about me? You know, I went to a home group with actors for about 4 years, and honestly, it was the worst thing because they all felt like their life was meaningless whilst I was out preaching and stuff. So I was like really getting good fruit and being a really good Christian. And it really was a wrong thinking, because that's not what it's about. It's about everything you do, giving it back to Him. That everything you create, everything you write, everything you draw, every conversation you have, you do it with Him and for Him. And that is, He receives that as worship. There's no sort of totting list. Totting list? Is that a... I don't really know what that is. Yeah, I was with this friend, and he was really feeling like he's about to get signed, very much scared that his career was not going to be honourable, and that, you know, that maybe, you know, it was all about him. And we would chat, and I really felt in that moment that I should just listen to him and just encourage him that he's a gift. And honestly, his music is just transcendent. It's not lyrically what, you know, typically Christian in that sense, but just beautiful. You can just feel a presence in it and a spirit, and I just know that it's just so pleasing to God and to everyone that hears it. And I was just trying to encourage him. We got up. I don't really know why I'm telling you this, but it is pretty cool. We got up, and as we were walking to the station, this random man came up to us, and he went, "Excuse me, I was sitting next to you guys. I sort of overheard your conversation. I hear you're struggling and stuff." And he turned around to my friend. He said, "I want to give you this." And he gave my friend an envelope. And we walked off. My friend was like, "Wow." And he was like, "It's thick, Kevin. It's really thick. I don't know what's in here." He texts me about 20 minutes later. He said, "There are 50 £20 notes in there." this stranger gave my friend a grand whilst we were having a coffee in Borough Market. I went back and told my workmates, and they said, can I go for coffees with you to Borough Market? Okay, why did I tell that story? It's a cool story, so I'll tell it because of that. But two, I needed that. I just needed to know that this is how God moves. When we meet together, when we have interactions, when we connect, when we're with each other, stuff happens. People change. The ugly becomes a little prettier. The broken becomes a little more whole. My dad flew over. I was in a play last year. I did it for 2 nights with my friend. And we acted in this play together. We put it on for 2 nights. I hadn't done a play in years. It was really great. My dad flew over and he came and saw it. And there's a big key part in the relationship where the part that I was playing, the actor reconnects with his father who he never knew his whole life. At the end of the play, my dad and mum and dad loved it. They came back to our house, we were having coffee. And my dad and I were in the kitchen. My dad began to open up to me. And he began to tell me how he had never called his dad before, because his dad never deserved the title, because his dad was an alcoholic. And it just began to really break me that in that moment, something that we'd just given up, that we'd just done with all our hearts, trying to connect, trying to use what we have, that the most unsurprising connection was with my father. And you know, being on the brink of being a father myself, seeing that brokenness that my dad was carrying that maybe he passed to me in that conversation, we're not going to pass that on to our son, you know, because we connected, because we used what we had, we welcomed love into it, and that ugly got a little prettier. And I hope that in that moment when our son's born, you know, that the healing of that will pass into his life. You know, coffee shops, hubs, tubes, work. This is where life is lived. And we need to release each other and endorse each other and dare each other to live love. You know, with the KXC mission statement, you know, to give ourselves recklessly away to God, to each other, and to the people of King's Cross. That, there it is. Let's get reckless. This is where life is lived. You know, when we're approaching Christmas, and Christmas is a time that's defined by connections and moments, you know, we'll be with people we don't like, we'll be with people who struggle, we might end up with some strangers, you know, there's nothing worse than sort of eat dinner party roulette where you don't know who you're going to end next to, you know, it can be deep, it can turn out real bad, but you have an opportunity. This might be a little somber to end on, but there's a girl in Alpha, and she was at a table, and I didn't know her story. And halfway through the conversation at the table, she told us that she was about 30, and she told us that her husband had died 10 years before, 20. And what do you do when someone tells you that? And all I could answer her was, the God that I serve is a God that specializes in bringing wholeness to brokenness. And whilst I can't give you the reason for that, what I can tell you is that is what our faith is about. That is why Jesus came to this earth. That is what he specializes in, taking brokenness and making it whole. You know, it started at Christmas, when Jesus came down, incarnate, in flesh, to be with us, to know us. Then he entered into our pain at the cross so that he could say, I understand your pain because I felt it too. I have that compassion, that stirring in my guts because I know what pain feels like too. And then when he rose up, he said, I've had victory. And in my spirit, I renew brokenness and pain because I'm the Prince of Peace. When you go out to Christmas, remember that you serve the Prince of Peace. And he wants to bring his love, his wholeness, his beauty into all your broken places, into all your relationships, into all your everyday activities. He wants you to have connections and moments and to give yourselves away recklessly to each other ultimately to him and to the people of King's Cross. I just pray that you guys, in these next few years, I'm excited for what's going to happen. It's you guys that stir things like this in me. And I hope that in this new year, over this Christmas period, you go and live that reckless life, that you dare each other. It took my wife to dare me. Dare each other. Endorse each other, validate each other, and be brave and reckless, and be with people. Look them in the eye. Don't be scared to touch them, hold them, hug them, because that is where life is lived, and that is life in abundance. Amen.
Should we stand?